And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky back with you. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good. DJ, look, I'm really excited because tonight, I mean, you're going to be on the call. I'm going to miss you tonight on Amazon and Twitch. I have PBU. Rhett will be
the primary backup, baby.
Primary backup. But no, it should be a lot of fun, man. The Chargers and the Chiefs, this is a great game. Look, with the Chargers knocking them off the last two times, you kind of want to see what it looks like now that the stage is big and you get a chance to see both quarterbacks showcase. You get a chance to see improving defenses. It's just fun, man. I think everyone loves a good Thursday night game, and I think we will get a goal.
Yeah, it was fun kind of waking up this morning and just knowing going to a stadium. There's something about it, you know, with Monday nights. I know Sunday nights kind of become like the big football, you know, event in terms of the ratings, but there's still something different about a Monday night or a Thursday night where there's no other game. You're the only game going. And when you have a big matchup like this, the stadium, I'm excited to just get out to the stadium, man, and kind of feel the juice and the energy. It's fun to be in those environments. And, you know, this game, it really could decide the division. So it's huge. And you've got kind of the fascinating element of no Rashawn Slater for the Chargers. How do they kind of cover that up? But then Chris Jones in that situation with Kansas City, you talk about two key members of your football teams not being there. We've said it all year long, right? This is the season, 17-game season with the COVID protocols and injuries is going to challenge the depth of your roster like never before. And I think this is Exhibit A this evening.
It is Exhibit A. Like, you're going to be able to see the depth and the way that you're able to kind of work around rosters and kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together. But more importantly, DJ, we always talk about quarterback's ability to elevate squads. You're going to see that throughout the league with some of these teams that are shorthanded, but they may have their franchise quarterback intact. Now more than ever, there's more stuff on the franchise quarterback to be able to kind of elevate a squad and get them to the postseason.
Yeah, I want to give a couple of next-gen numbers here before we move on. We got a great guest that's going to join us. Yogi Roth's going to join us in just a minute. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. But when you're looking at some of the next-gen stats, here's some of the numbers that stood out to me, Buck, looking at this thing. We've talked a lot about kind of that blueprint for Mahomes, you know, playing against him with the too high shell. And when you look at the next-gen numbers, it really bears it out. So KC's faced too high shells on 592 plays. That's 140 more than any other team has faced in the league. Everybody is playing this except for the Raiders, the two teams that they've torched. We'll get to that in a second. They're a single high team. The Chargers play too high 69% of the time. That's the fourth most. In their first meeting that the Chargers won that ball game, the Chargers were in a too high shell 91% of the snaps. In that game, Mahomes downfield passing, so 10-plus air yards, 5 of 14, 83 yards, 2 interceptions. So, the blueprint exists out there. The question is, you know, is Andy Reid going to be patient? Is Andy Reid going to run the football? And is Patrick Mahomes going to avoid trying to do too much? If he stays in himself, they'll be able to move the ball up and down the field, and they're going to score points. But I think the Chargers and what they've done in the previous meeting is what the rest of the league has done, minus the Raiders, is we're going to challenge you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way that you have to play the Chiefs. We've seen this for the better part of two seasons. The teams that are parking the safeties in the parking lot, that are willing to take away the deep ball and say, we're going to test your patience and your discipline when it comes to throwing the underneath routes. Those are the teams that have been successful. And when Pat Mahomes plays his game and he's content to beat him with a bunch of paper cuts, the Chiefs win. They win in a different fashion, but they win. But when he's impatient and he's big play hunting against those umbrella defenses, then we see the turnovers, and then we see other teams have opportunities to win the game. And so ultimately, this is a game that falls on number 15's shoulders. Yeah. Is number 15 content to take a million checkdowns? And I'll put Andy Reid in it. Is Andy Reid content to run the football when they're giving you the run with light boxes?
Yeah, and I'll just add, you know, I mentioned the Raiders. I watched that tape last week. So there were 9 explosive passes in last week's game for the Chiefs against the Raiders. 9. 7 of the 9, the Raiders were in a single high safety look. Like, I don't understand it, Buck. I know you do what you do, but the
when do
blueprint
what we do.
Exists.
We're going to do what we do.
Exists. Just do it, man.
We're going to do what we do. This is what we do. We line up. We're going to take the post away.
We're going to jump on the logo and play single high. How'd that work out?
That's right. That's what we're going to do. We're ready.
But it is kind of fascinating. I love jumping into these numbers here. The last one, I'll give you a couple more. design rollouts this year. Justin Herbert, 8% of the dropbacks, 463 yards, which is most in the league, 5 touchdowns, which is tied for second in the league. I think that's part of the deal tonight. Without Rashawn Slater, they're going to have to move the pocket with him. They can't leave him as a sitting duck back there. You can use tight ends and backs to help, but you're going to have to move the launch point if you're the Chargers to slow down Frank Clark and company. Because even without Chris Jones, Okafor's a good player. Frank Clark's a really good player. Melvin Ingram's playing well. You got to move him around.
Yeah, you got to move him around. And I think here's the thing about Melvin Ingram. Like, you already know that he's going to be on 12.
Oh, yeah.
Back. But Steve Spagnuolo has said that the one thing that Melvin Ingram has added is not necessarily his skills, but his angry demeanor in terms of the way that he plays has been infectious. And so the team is playing with that anger, that fever pitch and that energy. And they know how important this game is going to be for him. So without Chris Jones, they are going to take it up a notch. So you got to be ready to deal with that. And the way that you talk about moving it around, man, you can't let it become a feeding frenzy early in the game, because this is a defense that is, look, man, the last four games, they've been terrific. You don't want to get them going. And so, yeah, move Herbert around, slow it down, bootleg, screens, all of that other stuff. You got to slow them down. And I think you have to use all the misdirection and deception that you can find.
All right, we are going to get to an interview that we had with our good buddy Yogi Roth. If those that don't know, Yogi Roth works for the Pac-12 Network. Yogi Roth was a coach. He was on that USC staff early on with Pete Carroll. Has a great relationship with Pete. Actually, co-wrote his book that was you can find anywhere. It's a fantastic read. So Always Compete has kind of been Pete's philosophy, and Yogi is really dialed in on that. But Yogi does a great job. He's a lead analyst there at the Pac-12 Network. So we're going to give you that conversation we had with him, especially focusing on this Urban Meyer news that just came down. So we're going to get you that interview right after this. Buck, we're going to start things off today with one of our favorite people, one of the best in the business. You see him on the Pac-12 Network. You hear him talking football and going on beyond football as well. It's our good buddy, Yogi Roth. Yogi, how you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. Huge fans of the show. More importantly, huge fans of you guys, and fired up to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time, man. We had all these things planned out we want to talk to you about, and we're going to get to some of it a little bit later on. But I think we got to start here with what happened late last night, and that's the Jacksonville Jaguars deciding that the Urban Meyer experiment is over. They decided to move on there. I guess I kind of start off kind of open-ended. I want to kind of, you know, go through with all three of us to see, like, what can we learn from this situation? What did you take away from what happened there in Jacksonville?
I mean, a lot, right? We've all talked to enough people in the industry that have either worked for him at previous places or worked with him at previous places, and you get a mixed bag. I think one thing you know is that he's clearly the leader wherever he is. Yeah. He's clearly the alpha wherever he is, and everybody doesn't jive with that. I think ultimately, when I look at this specific situation, I'm reminded of, like, the great leaders I've been around: Pete Carroll, Chris Peterson, David Shaw, right out here on the West Coast, of the greatest leaders, which I think are rare, thrive in the eye of the storm, per se. And it felt like when things got chaotic, it dramatically unraveled. And dude, I can remember being 23 years old on SC staff and Pete being like, okay, everybody come and present your style, your vision, your theme, and your philosophy. I did it in 36 pages. I handed it to him. He goes, all right, now put each one in a sentence. And the reason was he said, when it gets hard, you got to lean against that. And it felt like all the things and the cliches that we heard from Urban Meyer around who he was and what he thought a successful organization looked like, they just kind of crumbled, right? Every couple of weeks, you saw something new happen. You guys know the NFL better than I do. So whether it's the pressures of that or being around older men, whatever the dynamics were for him, but I don't think the principles that he probably talks about a lot, clearly they weren't upheld at a variety of different stages throughout his process there. So it was a bummer, because we're all excited to see what he could do there. And heck, he didn't even get through one season.
Yeah, Yogi, I think for me, having worked closely with the Jaguars, I think of the three of us here, I'm probably the most disappointed, because I felt like I ate the cheese, right? I feel like multiple conversations that we had with them on this podcast, talking about culture and leadership and development and those things, listening to his podcast and reading his books and all that other stuff, and then watching it in practice, I can tell you that the team was all in. Like, all those sayings and catchphrases, when I talked to Trevor, which you know very well, Trevor, Josh Allen, their top guys, at the beginning of the year in the preseason, they were all about it. And then what you talked about actually came to fruition. In the eye of the storm, I thought that I would see someone who would be able to be like, okay, I've been through this situation before. Here's how I would manage it. And we didn't do it. And so now I ask you this, because we'll take this as a case study for leadership. What will you use from this experience when you're interviewing other leaders, or you're looking at other leaders taking other spots, and kind of predict or project how they may fare in those new environments?
Yeah. So every week when I call a game, it's so fun. You guys do it. Like, you get to meet with staff and players. And I asked, for 14 years now, I've asked the same question to start it off, to the head coach: what's the philosophy of the program? To both coordinators: what's the philosophy of the program? To players: hey, what's the philosophy of the program? And if it's not similar across the board, I can predict the game. And I'm like, dude, if it's tight late, they're going to fold, or they're not going to be able to be on the same page. And it's proven true. Right? And again, I go back to, I was lucky in my early 20s. I was around one of the best in Coach Carroll from a philosophical standpoint, his principles, everything that he stood for. Heck, I got to write his book with him, where I got in the weeds of what did he learn from the Jets, from the Patriots, and then, of course, taking it to SC and rolling ever since that moment. So that's where I net out, right? And I ask it now when I talk to new head coaches in our league: hey, what's the overarching philosophy that you have? And if it's a waning answer, then I'm saying, oh, they don't have it nailed. And heck, how hard is it to have it nailed? It's hard. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times you don't get it until you fail. Right? That's why I love seeing head coaches get second opportunities. And that's what's so disappointing to your point, Buck, of Coach Meyer. Like, he's been in this, right? Yeah. And it's easy to kind of throw stones at Florida and guys arrested, or Ohio State and the coaching situation that they clearly overlooked at times. And those are all fair. He's got to wear them. But you're thinking, he's seen a lot of environments, championship environments. How did this one get so out of whack? And I just got to imagine it. It looked to me from the outside that, like, the self-consciousness, the questioning probably of like, oh my God, can I do this? This isn't working. Mm-hmm. It's never been that way. Like, he's been the alpha. And in college, where I live, the head coach is the guy. Mm-hmm. In the league where you guys live, like, it's an even playing field. And I wonder if that rub of, hey, my hubris, who I am at the top of this thing, at least you read the reports of the staff meeting, things like that, that just got too out of whack and was so out of his comfort zone that this thing fell apart.
All right. So I wrote down a bunch of kind of words that I wanted to get to, because Bucky's right. We have had Coach on several times on the podcast, and he said all the right things, but in practice, he didn't live by it. I think we were doing something on offensive line. Buck, I don't know if you remember this, when we had Howard Mudd on. Yeah. We're talking to him about drills that he likes to do for offensive linemen. And he said, you know, the majority of his drills, Yogi, start with the offensive lineman beat. In other words, he wants to put him in an uncomfortable position, because that's what you're going to find yourself in the game. Anybody can just kick out of your stance and cover a guy up and redirect. He's going to put it where the guy's already on your upfield shoulder. Like, how do you recover when you find yourself in a poor situation? And I think that is the big issue here with Urban Meyer. We talked about all this stuff and building stuff from the ground up and all this kind of stuff, but we didn't necessarily dig in deep enough on, when you find yourself in the real deep end here, how do you get yourself out of it? He didn't have a plan. And I think I wrote down the words, some of these words I wrote down, you know, the lack of humility. And with humility, I think the word that jumps out to me is curiosity, right? When you stop being curious, when you think you've got all the answers and your coaches exist so that they can learn from you, not so that you can learn from them, I think that was very evident. The lack of trust that he had in those guys, and in turn, the entire organization ended up with a lack of trust in him. Fear and finger pointing. Like, what leadership book do you read where you lead by fear and finger pointing? Like, what year is this? What are we doing? And the last thing I wrote down was, if nothing else, and this is what probably surprised me the most, Yogues, if you've talked with Urban and you've been around him, man, you walk away saying that is a disciplined dude. He believes in discipline. He teaches it. He lives it. That ended up being one of the more undisciplined coaching situations I've ever seen, in terms of not even getting on the dang plane to go back with your team. That's when it was like, okay, this ain't gonna work.
Yeah, I can remember I got recruited by him back in 1999 now. And it was, I went to Notre Dame. He was a receiver coach. And you're right, you could tell then the discipline. Mm-hmm. I remember Utah, his final game. They beat my Pitt Panthers. I was covering that game, 2004 Fiesta Bowl. We've seen him at Pac-12 football games. He was working at Fox. And you're right, like, all those things follow him. And you're saying, okay, he's got an ego, clearly. Every elite coach has one to a large degree. But, man, he's got principles. And I just think that in the NFL, his principles probably got challenged. And you talk to people that have worked for him. I talked to a coach who used to work for him and left the profession because he was like, man, I don't want to coach like from a fear standpoint or try to I don't inspire guys, but like get to guys through, you know, that type of process. So I just think that I don't want to say like his style got played out, because I think that's like way too cliche to say that you can't be an quote unquote old school coach with this era. But I do think the one thing that I think needs to be celebrated is that athletes have a voice.
Yeah.
And it's a coach's job to help them gain mastery around that. But I saw it again, I front row seat when Pete did it at SC. Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lendale, all those guys thought they were the leaders of the team. And Pete loved that. But he goes, they're all reflecting what we're saying. Right. And I think when I look at the NFL and the situation, I think we put up Trevor on this unfair pedestal sometimes. You got to carry the franchise. He's still in his first year too. And I just felt like from the plane situation when Urban brought Trevor into a press conference, and here I am just as an outsider college football guy, but I was like, dang, like that is not leadership that wants that should be reflected by your players.
You know, what's interesting, Yogi, and I think this is because you know Trevor intimately from our time at Elite 11. I believe the person who has grown the most through this has been Trevor. And watching him and meeting with him in the preseason and talking to him throughout the course of the process and watching his pressers, I believe it has empowered him to be like, oh, no, no, this is how we have to do it. The way that he spoke out and talked about, we can't have drama in the organization and whoever's bringing about the drama. He said this a couple of days ago. We need to get those people out. And it was kind of telling because
who do you think that is?
He said that. Yeah. So he talked about that. And so I do believe that what you're saying is so true when you talk about the philosophy of the program, the principles that the leader speaks out. When the players reflect that and more importantly, promote that, that's when you have the good stuff. So now that he's faltered and all of that stuff, like how much of what he was able to accomplish on the collegiate level based on those principles that he's taught, do we really believe? Or was it the teams that he had were simply more talented than everybody else?
I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. You know, a lot of the talk radio, right, as this news is happening or people on television, they're saying, all right, he's done in the NFL, obviously, but will an AD hire him in 2 years? Right, he wins. Wherever he goes, he wins. Like, let the dust settle and all the other dramatic stories that'll happen in sports come up. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we all are in SoCal. Like, we know there was a ton of noise around him and SC when it opened up. Like, man, clearly not the right fit when you look at it now. But even then, when you're in it, you're like, I don't know. Like, with this generation of athlete, with, you know, what guys are doing, how NIL is working, like, I think he's going to have to adjust a bunch. I don't know if he keeps coaching. I think his legacy has always been tainted. I think it depends on what lens we see it through. I think every Ohio State and Florida fan, regardless of what he ever does in his life, are going to hold him up to this incredible standard and love him up, right? But I think the rest of us in college football that don't have an admiration or an obsession with either one of those schools, I think we look at it and say, I don't know. Like, yeah, he had some really good stuff to him, but I don't know.
I think he does. I think he does it at a smaller level. I think he does maybe the Rick Pitino thing and goes to like a group of five thing and kind of rebuilds and repairs his reputation. Because I don't think he can go out the way that he goes out now. I think that's too hard because we talk about the ego and all that other stuff. I think the lasting image of him in Jacksonville, I don't think that contained him. I think he has to kind of find a way to make that right. And I think the only way he can make it right is he has to coach again. He has to be successful at whatever level he coaches at again.
So I was looking this up the other day. I'm going to see if I could, I'm going to pull it up here and read it off to you, because I was talking to Bosa just the other day and was signing day. It just happened, as Yogi had been covering here for the Pac-12. And I'm looking back at Joey Bosa's class. Okay. So this is, let's just give a little bit of context here to what Urban was playing with there. So in Joey Bosa's class, it was him, Ezekiel Elliott, Von Bell, Eli Apple. Let's see, who else? Tyquan Lewis, who's playing in the league. Darren Lee was another first-round pick. Gary and Conley. I mean, good. I mean, just Bosa and Ezekiel Elliott alone, you're talking about guys that are in the top three to four at their position in the entire league. Like, he clearly had and I don't know that all these guys in this list were all, I know Darren Lee was like a three star. So he does have a skill of being able to kind of identify and recruit players. And Yogues, you know it. I mean, college football, at the end of the day, you're going to want a great recruiter over a great play caller. Like, just that's just what it is. When you get to the NFL, recruiting's null and void. Like, this is a level playing field. Being able to recruit does you nothing. You know, maybe you can evaluate and can help you some in the draft, but you bringing in 6 to 7 to 8 guys, you're not bringing in 25 new dudes every year. So I just think it's a different sport, man. And we've seen it. Lou Holtz went up there, it was a disaster. Bobby Petrino went up there, it was a disaster. Steve Spurrier went up there, it was a disaster. It's a completely different sport at that level.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning of like, one, will he coach again? I'm with you, both of you guys. Like, yeah, he will. I hope it's at a smaller level. I hope it's like when he went to Bowling Green and got it rolling, right?
That's
like,
where I think, that's where I think it's at.
It'd be awesome, right? Having fun again and scheme again. I mean, he's, look, you can't take away his prowess in the game. Like, guy's clearly elite in that. The personality side, like, well, what just happened over the course of the last year or the last couple years where things seemed to get out of whack, or the discipline that we talked about, like, was it adhered to off the field? And you look at when guys had gotten in trouble at previous places, like, did your playing ability give you a different backyard based on what, if you got into trouble off the field? Like, those things are fair to be addressed by him. But overall, it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of go do it again somewhere else. I'm sure someone would take a shot at him. I'm with you, Buck. I think he wants to, I would imagine in a couple of years, he'd want to go do it again. But overall, I do think that the player has changed as well, right? And the player, to me, in the recruiting scene, they only care about what just happened next. Yeah. That's it. They want, like, Lincoln Riley's going to kill it because he was in the CFP 3 times. They're not talking about the 100 plus first round picks at USC. They're talking about what happened just now. 3 guys went to the Heisman, top draft picks, Kyler Murray, etc. That's just what they care about. And that's what I think even happened when he went to Ohio State. But he was a huge name. He'll still have that cachet. And I remember recruits telling me, when Urban called me, it was like, whoa, Urban Meyer's on the phone. I think he'll probably still have that in another year or two with 16, 17 year olds at that time.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Yogi, I think you bring up a good thing because you talk about like how people react in the eye of the storm. I think it's interesting. I'm going to use Urban to kind of talk about Pete Carroll, because this year, I think, was Pete's hardest year. And he, by his own admission, said that, like, hey, man, this losing stuff is hard. They were in a 5-game losing streak or whatever. Now, lo and behold, I'm not saying that they turned it around, but then they're sitting at 4-8 and they still have a chance. Knowing what you know about Pete Carroll having to handle that adversity, what was the difference in the way that they responded, the way Urban responded compared to the way Pete has responded and the way that you've seen him respond in crisis?
I think, to me, it always comes down to one word, which is hope. If you, do you have that as a team? Like, I look at, like, look at Arizona in college football. They won 1 game. Every week, they played as though it was like the national championship. Jed Fish got it going. Like, he learned it from Pete. He learned it from Belichick. Learned it from McVay. All guys around his coaching sphere. Pete, same deal, right? He leans so hard on, what is our style going to be, man? And it's never been about Sunday, or it's never about Saturday when we were together at SC. It was always about, like, and you guys know this, competition Tuesday or competition Wednesday now in the NFL, like making the day the focus and making sure guys believe and have hope that they can go win. I got to imagine in Jacksonville, at least if you just read reports, you guys are dialed in more than I am. It felt like there was no hope. And the league's hard because the minute you're out of the playoffs, it's kind of like, make sure I don't get hurt, at least perceptually. Let's get through the season and just keep it moving and make sure we get paid. Versus, like, can you keep it connected? And Pete is magical at that. Best I've ever seen in terms of keeping guys connected together, believing, like, hey, we're going to keep building this thing. Keep swinging, keep swinging, keep swinging. And I'm not surprised that he's done it. And as I said, the best guys, I don't care what David Shaw, and again, I'm in college, David Shaw, with Chip Kelly, like guys that really have a dialed in philosophical approach, Chris Peterson, when it's hard, but man, they kind of love it because they're tested. Mm-hmm. And that's where it all comes out from the staff standpoint, or it's when it all splinters and falls apart. And I bet every level of football is very similar to that analogy.
I'll tell you what, you can just watch the tape and see. I mean, I don't want to use the Q word. I'm not saying that the team quit, but that was a lesson-inspired bunch when you watched them on the field. It was the play on the field was reminiscent of Urban's handshake after the game was over. It was a down, depressed, defeated group. And I think, you know, I think that's, to me, if you're Shad Khan, I think once you see that and you're like, there's no coming back from that. Once the team has tuned out everything that you're saying, the respect is vanished. There's no coming back from that, man. I don't think you really have a choice. Yogs, I want to transition a little bit here while we got you to talk about some of these quarterbacks, because we've got kind of intriguing quarterback class coming up. I know with the Elite 11, all the work that you do there, Bucky's there with you as well. You get a chance to kind of see these kids and be around them. I guess the first one I'd love to ask you about is down there at Ole Miss with Lane and Matt Corral, who's coming off a phenomenal season and who's got a lot of juice and a lot of buzz right now.
Huge fan of Matt. Okay, the passer's easy. It doesn't take many throws to figure out he can deal. But we remember him, Buck, from the Elite 11. This is a guy who at one time was a long-time SC commit, right? And then things didn't go really smoothly on a visit for him. And he's trying to find a new home. I think he then committed to Florida, if memory serves me right. Obviously didn't go there. And then he went to Ole Miss. And I think the best thing for him was getting out of Southern California. This guy's, you know, look, everything in context, but his upbringing wasn't the smoothest. He had his own challenges. And I think that the development of a high school recruit, when so many eyes are on them and they're committing to schools like USC or Florida or come to the Elite 11, like, it is bonkers how much attention they have. Here's the example. I do this every year. The opening day at the Elite 11, when the media is around to be around quarterbacks, I go up and I turn my back to the media and I just listen in. And I'm like, all right, what are they going to say? And Matt Corral, like every quarterback preceding him, gave the same political answer. I just want to compete. I want to get better. All these guys, they're just mimicking the actions they see on NFL Network, they see on television from their quarterbacks. They don't really have any answers. So when they get in our environment, you guys have been there, we try to like teach them emotional intelligence, which is, do you have the capacity to deal with your thoughts and the thoughts of others with empathy? And do you have any, not even mastery, but do you have any knowledge around who you are and what you stand for? And I've seen Matt Corral go through that journey. And I think if you mirror that with Lane Kiffin's journey, they're kind of the perfect marriage for these last two seasons in college football. They've both been criticized in their own right. They've both had lows. They both had epic highs. And I think that Matt is going to come out in the NFL with a guy who's going to have some superpowers. And it's not just going to be his right arm. It's going to be like, dude, I've been through some, you know what? And it started out in 10th grade when there was a rumor that I got into a fist fight. Right, in my high school, because he went to a huge high school. And then it happened when I decommitted. Did I get dropped? Did I not? And then it happened at my next visit. And then it happened when I was at, you know, played in the SEC. And then I had all this hype in the Bama game and we didn't play great. Like, I just think his body of experiences to me says, I will ride with that dude. And I think locker rooms are going to love him. I hope he gets a quarterback coach, OC, head coach that will continue to develop him versus think these guys are finished products emotionally and mentally when they come in, because they're not, especially now. But man, Matt has all the stuff to be a starter in the NFL, not just a guy on a roster.
Okay, now, I can't remember if Kenny Pickett came through Elite 11 or came through the process, but I know he's a Pitt Panther, so I know that you have intimate knowledge on it.
Tell me about him light up. Did you see Yogi just light up right there?
Oh, my God. I mean, maybe I'll do the same when we talk about Sam Howell, but tell me about the Pitt Panther and what makes him so special.
Yeah, so Kenny came through the Elite 11 camp circuit. He never made it to the finals, but he was that guy that showed up with enthusiasm and intensity. Like, I'm kind of like Joe Burrow. I remember Joe Burrow at Ohio State, and he was in line two, right? And line one is like the A-listers, if you will. And he was like,
they don't know that, Yogi. They don't know that it's A-team and Supreme Team. They don't know that the Supreme Team is the B-listers. They don't know that.
Well, we've adjusted since that fateful day in Columbus, by the way. But he's very similar to Joe, of like, he has this like competitive, insane satiability to him. I remember being on Pitt's campus in training camp 3 summers ago, and you couldn't really tell then. You're like, it's a mixed bag. But talking to him or connected with him, and of course the staff at Pitt in the offseason and throughout the year that has gone on, they love the fact that he came back, not just because they won the ACC, but because he came back and got to develop what I just referenced, which is the emotional intelligence side. I just think that college is so often now seen as like a stepping stone to the NFL versus a place where you can process who you are as a player, as a passer, but then also like the inner dialogue that you have. Ask Justin Herbert why he came back for a senior year. It wasn't because he wanted to be just a top 10 pick. It's because he wanted to be able to handle an NFL locker room. TJ, you know him as well as anybody, right? Like, you're around him every week almost. So I just think that very similarly with the COVID bonus year for Kenny Pickett, he came back and got to just settle in comfortably who he is. Like, look at his post-game interviews. Of course, they're kind of funny because he's like, I'm going to have a coldie or whatever he says. But he's got a comfort in his own skin. And I think now in this era, it's so hard because you're constantly being told who you are and what you are as a quarterback in the landscape, which is major college football. And Kenny, I think he'll walk in and want to, as you said earlier, learn, develop, and then he'll go compete. And I think the right situation, he could be a starter as well in the NFL.
I want to ask you kind of an overarching theme before I let Buck get you to howl, and you guys can just talk about all your alma maters the whole time. Just light up.
You can go on yours if you want.
Oh, man, I know.
Don't be mad at us.
I mean, good night. I'm just curious, Yokes, because on a big picture quarterback-wise, as we're kind of getting into our draft prep and getting ready, you have a unique perspective because you get a chance to see these kids as young kids, as well as kind of follow on the ones that have been some really good ones. You just referenced Justin Herbert that have come through the pack. But when you go back and kind of look back on it, are there maybe one warning sign you might see with a young kid that you've been able to track over the years and say, okay, this has showed up. That's not good. That's kind of been a little bit of a tell. And maybe one thing that's a positive indicator these guys are going to have success.
Oh, yeah. I think there's a lot, right? Like, number one, you look at their community. Like, I say this especially – let's just go SC as an example. Yeah. I think oftentimes outside of USC, their reality is you're 5-star. You just announced you're 3 and out. You've been committed for 2 or 3 years. Your first offer was in 8th grade as a quarterback. And your reality is you're supposed to be the dude. Then you walk into the building and the film says, you're not the dude. Your teammates know you're not the dude. And those two things clash and pull at one another. Very rarely do we see some of these huge recruits maximize potential. Tate Martell's an incredible example, unfortunately. Offer in 8th grade, committed to Washington. He should be talked about in the NFL draft, right? If you guys looked at this show 5, 6, 7 years ago, he'd be a guy we'd be talking about. Well, he never started a quarterback, right? And now he's at UNLV, walked on just to kind of be a part of a healthy environment with Marcus Arroyo. Thank God for him to have Marcus say, hey, come on to our roster versus the guy that just gets trashed everywhere he goes. He was living up to an expectation, never lost a game, never lost a 7-on-7 game, was living the 3-stripe life, like all the stuff these kids think they should be doing. And how can you even have a sense of self? Right. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I look at is like, what is their environment? And is it reality? Right. When I meet these guys, sometimes I see them in spring football on their visits. I remember DJ Uyunglele was on his visit to Oregon when I called their spring game a couple years ago. What's he operating like? Right? Does he have humility? Like, what's his respect like? He was really impressive. Tua, the same deal. And kind of go down the list. And I think when I see him in the summer, number one, I ask him about their environment. Right? I had a player, I'll never forget it, his Juwan Pass, who was at Louisville.
Yeah.
Who I did a piece on his mom. You can see it online. She had beaten cancer. And she was so proud of herself. She told her son, hey, I'm cancer-free. It was the most amazing moment. And then off to the side, I talked to her and I said, tell me about your son. He's like, my baby's going to get us to the NFL. And the minute I heard that, my heart broke a little bit because he had the NFL tattooed on his arm, right? He had this expectation and didn't know the environment he was walking into, but he's labeled as a whatever if he doesn't live up to that. That is not fair to him. Mm-hmm. So I say environment, and that's a big discussion. That's a whole show for us of like, what is the environment of a quarterback when they're coming up? So that's where I start. The second thing is, how do they learn? Okay, you have to be able to pass. You still have to be able to hit spots. Like, we've seen that. If you're inconsistent in high school, you're probably inconsistent everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's been two quarterbacks drafted that had a losing record in high school, I think, in the last 20 years, right? And you have to be a winner. You have to be able to hit spots. But overall, for me, the other side of that is, how do you learn? And most of these guys, when they walk into our meeting and we're like, drop your favorite play, you should see them sweat. We were in the room a couple years ago. Remember when Trent Baalke was in the room with us? And we did it with, it was Tua, Jalen Hurts, Manny Wilkins, Jared Stidham, Drew Locke. I think I'm forgetting one or two other guys that were in the room. And he's like, drop your favorite play. And then he started talking about it. He's like, so how many brothers and sisters do you have? And one of the quarterbacks up on the board, like pausing, like, and he's like, I'm testing you to see if you can do it while I'm asking you questions. Can you process? How do you learn? So that's the next thing that I go to of like, what's their process like? And we have to strip them down and say, hey, it's okay. Let's drop what cover 2 looks like. Mm-hmm. Let's drop what a post player looks like. That to me is really fun for us, and then kind of seeing where those guys go from it. And that's where you notice, like, Justin Fields, one of the best learners I've ever been around.
Unbelievable.
Him and Jameis still to this day are the two, and two are the three most elite players I've seen. And Trevor, those four, it's like those four and then everybody else in my 15 years now at Elite 11.
Wow.
And it was their it factor. It was how they learn. It was their note-taking. It was their seriousness. It was their ability to joke and relate, not take themselves too seriously. It was their community. Not a lot of drama. If we go back to the initial open of the show, not a lot of drama.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was going to ask you about Sam Howell, but then you bring up the it factor thing. Can you define that part of it? Because like, Yogi, and doing, I think I've done the Elite 11 thing for maybe 10 or 12 years being around it. But like, you can just sense when the guy has the stuff, right? And you can talk about the environment and all that other stuff, but like, how would you quantify that it factor that we all know? Because we're on the sideline, we're like, oh yeah, he got it. That one has it. These other guys may not, but this one, he has it. Like, what is that, if you can put it into words?
For sure. We put it into a documentary, two a year. We did a documentary called The It Factory, and we went around and interviewed NFL coaches. It was Russell, it was Pete, it was all of our community, as well as Trent and you guys. And we jammed on that. And where I netted out, and I think we collectively as an Elite 11 unit netted out, is the It Factor is defined as the following. You walk into the room and people feel your presence. Now that could be good or bad. The second part is, and you make them better. Mm-hmm. Tua Tagovailoa is my favorite story at the Elite 11. Yeah. He doesn't say a curse word, doesn't have a negative bone in his body, but he can connect with a kid from South Florida, a kid from Lincoln, Nebraska, a kid from Brooklyn, New York, and he just met him. And you saw this infectious quality of him. People were drawn to him, and he made him better. Like, I just think that's it. And I do a show now on the Pac-12 called The It Factory, where literally we done Kayvon Thibodeau, Keaton Slovis, like all of our stars come on it. And that's what we talk about. Like, what is it for you? And can you see it? And is it working?
That's fantastic. I want to, I know we're running a little low on time here, but you mentioned Thibodeau. Just your take on him, something about him. Maybe we don't know. You're around him a lot more than we are. We'll get a chance to dig in and know him a lot better as we go through the process here. But obviously in the mix to be the number one overall pick. What have you learned about him?
Okay, well, we all see the game wrecker stuff. Like we know that. Third down, find a better guy in the country. Probably not coming off the edge. Mario Cristobal said it. I've been around him enough. I mean, we had him at the opening, Elite 11, et cetera. Five-star work ethic, man. You talk to his D coordinators, whether it's Andy Avalos or Tim DeRuiter, five-star work ethic. And I think that, yes, he did extremely well in NIL, but he's a businessman and a football player. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that dynamic. I think sometimes when teams lose, players get cast a little bit of shade of like, oh, is he focused? Just because he's doing something that's never been done in the first year that was even legal, which is NIL. So I look at him as a hyper-focused guy, very aware, and a technician. Like we did a piece on him on the Pac-12 of like the art of the pass rush. And I just think that for most players at times, it's I'm going to beat you because I'm better than you. For him, he's really become a detailed player over his 3 years. And you could just watch Pac-12 championship game freshman year was just faster. Mm-hmm. Sophomore year was more of a technician. This year, he was challenged at times against Utah, probably one of the better offensive lines in the Pac-12. But still, I think hands, shed, skill set, all that stuff is really impressive. But what I love most is how that guy thinks. You know, he'll fit in great in a locker room. He'll be a total team guy and somebody that he'll make a face of a franchise.
You know, I want to get off the draft, but I want to ask you this last question because you mentioned it briefly. You talked about NIL. We were actually all together down in Redondo when the NIL stuff kind of was ratified and approved. How do you believe or how have you seen the NIL change the landscape, not only of recruiting and that stuff, but team building and connectivity? What do you think has been the biggest challenge that coaches or everyone is facing with NIL and the way it's impacting players?
We need another hour. I'll say this, bro. We were, you know, that Starbucks at the Torrance Marriott, right? I remember walking into it, and I will never forget this either. I walk in and I see Spencer Rattler in the back corner with an agent, and his parents aren't there. And I'm saying, this is interesting. And I know the agent, he's cool. He comes up to me, hey, yo, what's happening? And I see Spencer signing these things, and I'm saying to myself, welcome to a totally new era. I'm watching an elite player, a Heisman candidate, touted as the number one pick, sign with a marketing agent in a freaking Starbucks on July 1. Like, it was just it wasn't even out of a movie. It was like, no, that's an outtake. Like, that can't even make the final cut. Like, this is crazy that it's happening, but it's real. So I start there just to showcase, like, it was a little bit of chaotic. Now here we are. It's the first signing class with NIL. We've got players at Texas reportedly going to make 50 G's if you're on the offensive line, right? We saw Quinn Ewers leave high school early to go to Ohio State, make 1 point, whatever, and now sign at Texas. And I wonder, I think now there's like a strategy, right? If I'm an elite player, why wouldn't I go to him with the biggest offer, go get paid, whatever I'm going to get paid, and then transfer the next year to where I wanted to go? I was jacked up, but I could see it working. And I, when I talk to players and their families, it's all to me about like short money versus long money. And I still think that college athletes are dramatically under leveraging their school. I look at the Fab Five, one of the best brands in the history of sport. Those guys are, I would hope whoever they're working with is making them bank off of that brand that they leverage because of that Michigan and Nike swoosh and that Michigan logo. I hope that players are understanding that the university they go to, no matter if it's a $1.5 million deal with a kombucha company, Ohio State's logo will do more for Quinn Ewers than that NIL deal, or Texas's logo will do more for him than any NIL deal. And I hope the guys don't get disconnected to that. And the coaches, man, they're like, it's a new world. We don't speak the language. We don't know the population, and we don't know the rules. And they're not being enforced if there are rules. Like, you can't incentivize to play. But it seems as though people are being incentivized to attend and play, right? And there's zero enforcement. So it's an ugly time in college football. The only way out is to remind myself the 53 and a third by 120 can't mess with. So at least on game day, it's more enjoyable.
I said last one, but this is the last final thing, because this NIL, we were trying to like look into the future, what this could look like. I was talking to Klatt the other day, and we were kind of workshopping this of how crazy this could get. Would you be surprised if like a year or two from now, like four of the top players in college football could be a quarterback, running back, receiver, pass rusher, if they banded together and said,
we are
a package deal, all four of us. You can get all the whatever companies you want to get, give us your best offer, and all four of us will travel to your team. It's just like you talk about a college super team that could be coming. I mean, you think about all the oil money with A&M and Texas, and think about all, you know, the Nike money with Oregon. Think about the package that some of those places could put together if they were going to get. It's like you're buying a national championship.
Yeah. It's kind of nuts when, you know, because that's obviously illegal, what you just referenced. You can't present a package to anybody, but you can say, hey, I've got, like, we're three on a screen now. I got three slots at X school that three players can come fit in. And we've got these nine companies. They're going to be split three different ways. Like, that's the way that it would be shaped. I would say, if I was even advising athletes, I would say, well, why don't you think even bigger than that? Because those deals can get dropped. I'm wondering, like, where's the media company coming? Where athletes are saying, hey, DJ and Bucky, I love your show, but you're either going to pay me, or actually I'm just going to do all my interviews on whatever website. Or
we've seen some of that stuff. We've seen some of that stuff. I think like at A&M, like players have kind of done exclusive content deals.
Well, Collins got his whole thing. Collins got his podcast with different, you know, I think he's got a Notre Dame one and a couple of different ones, but I'm just saying, like, it's endless. And the thing is, the school can get cover because they can just stay out of it and just say, like, what we used to say about, I mean, everybody knows how dirty college basketball is, but that's all the shoe companies. The shoe companies saying, okay, we've got these three kids. Well, we're not going to put them at a school that's sponsored by somebody other than us. So here's your three options of the three programs you can go to. You know, it's up to you.
Yeah. And think about how that is from a coaching standpoint. I've talked to a lot of coaches, obviously, prepping for signing
day. It's gross.
And yeah. And what it's going to do is, and we've seen the waves, right? A couple years ago, it was everybody wanted to get to the NFL. About 15 years ago, every coach wanted to get to the NFL for job security. And then it flipped and they were like, no, I want to go to college. They sign a 3-year deal. And now I think the trend may begin of, man, I can't manage all this. Cause you're right. Like, the school isn't even managing. Like, I've called a bunch of games out West and I would ask the respective SIDs, hey, what NIL deal does your quarterback have? And they'd be like, you know, we're not really sure. We've seen some of these. And I'm like, can you imagine being the head coach and not knowing? Now, granted, NFL teams don't know every deal that Aaron Rodgers had, but Aaron Rodgers' mind is developed. And that's where I still go, even on this portal thing of like, these kids still haven't developed, right? It's worse than free agency. Free agency has a time period. They're grown men that have probably worked through at least one contract. These are 19-year-old kids that are in free agency, and it's already gross, right? Dabo, who I'm not a fan of everything he says, but what he said about tampering, I think he's exactly right. Because kids are calling schools saying, hey, if I enter the portal, do I have a spot?
Yeah.
So now, like, coaches are saying, well, do I get in the game or do I uphold some sort of integrity? I don't know.
I like elements of it. I like elements of it that the kids are getting, are getting, be able to profit off of what they've done. But you knew once that little inch was given that there was going to be a mile that was taken and can kind of go in a different direction. But I do think the elements of it are healthy that, you know, like you were around Reggie, like can you imagine what Reggie was really worth during those years. Like,
I think every kid should get NIL is incredible. And even the unintended consequences we got to deal with. The problem that we have currently is there's no structure around anything. There's just no structure on anything. Like, right, wasn't one of the first rules you can sign with an NIL agent, but then when you go to the NFL, he can't be your real agent? What is that about? Like, why would we do that?
I can already tell you for a fact that's not the case.
Totally. Of course it's not the case. But you see the point of, like, I just think that there needs to be, and I've said this for a decade now, and I'd imagine you'd agree, college football has gotten so big, and the CFP claims to be an event company, which it is. But they've also become, along with ESPN, the presidents of college football. But there's no enforcement of rules under that presidency. It's all just marketing of the games and the rights around these teams. We need a building. I don't care where it is. Top floor is Power Five. Second floor is Group of Five. 1AA, whatever. And just have some oversight to this sport, because it's getting out of whack. And what's going to happen? Is guys are going to sign great deals, and I hope they get the most money possible. But the problem is, what I'm worried about most is the mental health of these players, because they're put on such a pedestal. Elite 11 is a great example. We do it to them too, and then they don't play. Right? Think about it. Years ago, we named an Elite 11 MVP. He went to UCLA, never played. That's hard to deal with. Like, you can have on any of these guys that have gone through the process, and now you add an NIL and all this exposure. Like, I'm worried if Quinn Ewers doesn't play. He's a sweet kid. He never asked to get blown up after Steve Clarkson's quarterback camp. It just happened. Mm-hmm. And then he had to deal with it. Like, I still just think that, and Dr. Gervais talks about it all the time, of like the mental development doesn't really complete until you're 25 or so. And we're asking these guys to make decisions and people in their lives. It's just, that's the part that my heart kind of breaks a little bit for where we are in college football.
Well, dude, you've been super generous with your time. We kept you long today, Yogues. I know you've got a schedule release show to get to here coming up for the Pac-12, see what the schedule looks like. I would just add that if we could go back in time and have NIL during our era, Yogi would have made so much money off of Crew Gel. He would have crushed.
Yeah. Hey, I'm still taking deals. You know, still taking.
Yeah, you're still open. Yeah. Come on in. Come on down. Yeah. Surf Wax, you name it. You're open for business, baby. Hey, you're the best, Yogues. We appreciate your time, man. Have a great day.
Cool, man. Hope to see you at some bowl games. Stay safe.
All right, Buck. It's always great to catch up with Yogues, man. He's really salt of the earth, and I think always adds a great perspective.
Yeah, I mean, like, he does a great job at what is involved in all the many things that he's involved with, from production to being in front of the camera to working with the kids at the Elite 11 camps and stuff. Like, I just think he has a great feel for what's going on. Like, he has his finger on the pulse. And so it was great to have that conversation about so many different things, from leadership to the quarterbacks that we will talk about that are on the horizon for entering the class, to then just talking about some of the stuff that the NIL has done to impact the game and how it's kind of changed a lot of it for college coaches and the way that you build a team. I mean, it's just a different world now.
Yeah, on the NIL thing, I want to make sure I'm kind of clear on that, because I do like the fact that kids are getting a chance to get compensated for the value that they bring at the college level. I am also, I think you can have both opinions, right? I'm glad they're able to get compensated. On the other side, as a kind of somebody who grew up as a coach, you know, if you grew up as a coach and kind of what you're doing, you're coaching high school and say you just keep moving on up the ladder, I don't think it would be something that I want to do. Like, I got out of scouting because I didn't want it. The background work that you had to do, you're almost more of a private investigator than somebody who wanted to watch football, you know, evaluate players, rank players. Like, that's what was my passion. So the scouting world kind of left me because I didn't want to go the way that it was going. I can see there's going to be some coaches that say, man, I just wanted to coach ball. I just want to, you know, work with players, develop young men, and then, you know, put together game plans. In terms of trying to coordinate sponsorships and deals, like, that might be a little out of their wheelhouse.
Yeah, it might be out of their wheelhouse. I'm going to say this, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't kind of acknowledge the fact that the reason why there's been so much of an outroar the last couple of days has been because Deion Sanders, our former colleague at NFL yep. Network, NFL Media, he was able to flip the number one prospect in the land and Travis Hunter. He decommitted from Florida State. He ends up at Jackson State. Jackson State is a HBCU, historically and predominantly black college that was playing 11-1. They play at a lower level, but you typically don't see a five-star player with that kind of pedigree make his way down to play for Jackson State. And part of that has been fueled by Deion Sanders, obviously personality and his coaching pedigree and that stuff, but also maybe the NIL deal that they were able to secure for Hunter to come down there. And so when you see those kinds of things and you see a different player in the game with the Deion Sanders and like, it has completely upset the apple cart. And so now you're beginning to wonder, like, some of these other schools that maybe you didn't necessarily consider threats to kind of pluck and secure top players, now they're in the game depending on what kind of backing they can get from those in their community and around the program. Yeah, it's a game changer. And it's one of those things that people are going to be uncomfortable with, particularly old school coaches who are used to doing it a certain way. And now it doesn't operate like that. I mean, we had Coach Brown on, Mac Brown from North Carolina. He was talking about just the exasperation in dealing with those players who are going to the transfer portal yeah. after 1 year or after a bad game or after you maybe coach them hard and they don't like that. It's a different thing. As a yeah. coach now, you better have a bunch of people skills to be able to navigate this. And your people skills need to be on par with your X's and O's, because if you can't communicate and navigate and kind of keep it all together, it's going to be hard for you to field a team that is able to play at their potential because you have so many guys kind of looking out for themselves under the guise of a team.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I did see an interview with Prime this morning where he kind of refuted some of the rumors that were out there about Barstool and Penn Gaming kind of coordinating to give this kid like $1.5 million. He said that was ridiculous. So he refutes that. The one thing, my point on the Deion thing, which I'm stoked for him, he's able to get this done. But this to me was a proof of concept. So when Deion is up for these mm-hmm. jobs at these power programs, and you can go in there and say, man, I promise you, trust me, I can recruit. I'll be able to get big time dudes in here. And they go, well, you know, he's promising us he can do this. Like, no. This is proof of concept. This is the number one player in the country. I got to come to Jackson State. Now you're here in a Power 5 team. You don't think I can get kids? Like, this is my proof of concept. And oh, guess what? By the way, even though you can't say it exactly like this, if I come, who do you think is going to come with me? You know, and that's what I would tell the kid. Like, because if I'm that kid's parents, I would say, okay, I want my son to play for you, coach, but I'm a little bit worried that you're 11-1. You have one more good year. You're getting a bigger job than my son. What about my son? And we've seen it before. We look at the quarterback who's, I believe, at Western Kentucky, right? Who came from Houston mm-hmm. Baptist, I believe. His mm-hmm. coordinator came with him. His receiver came with him. They all kind of moved up a level. So why, you know, if Deion can collect some talent there, it's almost like not only are you going to get me, you're going to get me in a collection of some kids that would, you know, potentially come with me.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, man. Like, I am surprised not at how productive and how successful Deion has been at Jackson State on the field, but just look, man, it's one thing to be a visionary and to say, hey, I have a vision for how we're going to do this. It's another thing to make it come true. And you're yeah. right. Everyone's taking notice because that was a tremor that he sent through the college football landscape. And it definitely is an eye-opening experience.
I mean, this is Deion Sanders now. Like, for all those people that are surprised, like, this is Deion primetime Sanders. Like, there is not a cooler human being on planet Earth. And if you thought he wouldn't be able to relate and to be able to recruit, then you haven't been paying attention for the last 25 years.
Well, here's the thing, DJ. Just think about that. Like, Deion was the player when I was in college. Like, Deion was the thing. Like, yeah. to still be relevant, like, 25, 30 years later, based on like a memory, it's Jordan-esque yeah. in terms of like his impact and the fact
that he is a Jordan. He's the Jordan for football. Like, he is. Like, Michael Jordan was the coolest dude on the planet. Obviously, it's still represented today, long after his playing days are over. If you asked the majority of people the coolest, you know, the kind of pinnacle of what you want in terms of kids wanting to emulate, it's still Deion. All these years after he's done playing, there's nobody nobody has taken that mantle from him in this game. Nobody.
Nah, nobody. It's a different thing. So yeah. This is fun, man. I love these conversations.
Yeah, good pal. We're going to say goodbye right after this. All right, Buck, this was a fun one, man. Great conversation with Yogi Roth. Got a chance to preview this big Thursday night game. The NIL stuff, which is fascinating to me. A lot of ground we covered today on the episode.
Yeah, a lot of ground. This is fun, man. I think you can never get enough. We always talk about football, and you just always wonder what the storyline is going to be. The one thing about a podcast, man, we're never lacking for content because there's always something going on.
No doubt.
Always something. It's always a ton of fun.
No, I do want to take a chance here and promote one of our fellow podcasts because our buddy Rhett Lewis has a new pod. Nabil, can you jump on here and help us out a little bit here because we have really something. We always want to encourage guys to check out stuff we have going on at NFL Media Group. But this one we really want to get behind because it's an outstanding podcast. Tell everybody the name and how they can get it.
Yeah, it's Inside Report. You could get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Right now they do 3 podcasts a week, so people can check that out.
Yeah, it's Rhett who's bringing on a lot of the reporters, talented reporters here at NFL Media Group, covering the biggest stories with all the inside information. So we encourage you guys to check that one out. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Appreciate you guys hanging with us, and we'll catch you next time right here on Move the Sticks.